G'day, folks. Talk to Aaron Lane from Combat Nutrition, a specialist in weight cutting techniques for combat sports athletes to optimize their performance in the ring or the octagon. And he's got general nutrition plans for everyone. And we yarn about cryotherapy, sensory deprivation tanks, the power of mushroom supplements, and more. It's really interesting. Awesome. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs. Oh,
yeah. Aaron from Combat Nutrition.
That's
Brother, thanks for coming down here and having a yarn with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
So you said you were originally from out west, off camera. So out Dubbo way.
Dubbo way, yeah.
Yeah.
All the family are still out there. Grew up there, born out there, grew up there, moved to Sydney, young teenager, older kid. Then up to the Central Coast as a young adult. So, yeah, been around a bit.
Yeah. And you're in a nice spot, mate, on the Central Coast there. Yeah, so
down at Saratoga. Yeah, on the water there, little peninsula, little point there, old fishing town.
Yep.
Beautiful place.
Beautiful spot. So with combat nutrition, mate, and what's, like, if we emphasise on combat,
yep,
martial arts.
Yep.
What's the background, like, with yourself with martial arts or generalised combat sports there, mate?
Okay, well, just rewinding it back a bit further, I'm actually a type 1 diabetic, so that's how I got into nutrition. I had to kind of learn as a kid myself when I was first diagnosed. I had to change the diet around a bit, had to cut out my sugars, had to be able to count my carbohydrates because I'm insulin dependent, so I got to give myself a needle before any time I eat dinner, breakfast, lunch, dinner, anytime I eat any food. So I had to learn how to count carbohydrates so I could give myself the insulin properly. Fast forward, 10 years then, I got into martial arts, got into Muay Thai, some junior boxing, just after school kind of stuff with friends. And as I got into a...
And did that start out west or more in Sydney? Or?
Yeah, more in Sydney then. Yeah. I moved to Sydney when I was 10, so, I was in Dubbo till I was 10, Sydney from 10 to 20, then I've been up here for 20 to 30. So, I did some amateur boxing, Muay Thai, and when I moved up the coast here, just at Wyong with Tim Drury, Fight 108, started training with him, had a few amateur fights, and that's when I really learned the importance of weight cutting and how a lot of people were doing it wrong. Had my experience coming from a diabetic, knowing how to count carbs and whatnot. So I tend to took it upon myself to start, people were asking me, hey, what you're doing this and why are you doing that? And so then I started to pursue nutrition as a career.
And was it a particular martial art in general that, apart from, it's very important and what you have to do for general health and well-being as a diabetic, but to do with, was with martial arts, was it generally Muay Thai that sort of helped inspire the nutritional values that come along with weight cutting and along that sense?
Yeah, well, I fell in love with Muay Thai, training with Tim, had a couple of amateur fights, and I went over to Thailand.
You went to Thailand?
Yeah, went to Thailand and trained in a camp over there. And everything was kind of starting to connect together, like stemming from still being a diabetic. So when I was over there, I still had to look after myself, still had to watch what I was eating.
And how was it over there trying to...
Different.
Because when you're talking about carbs, because they eat a fair bit of carbs over there.
Yeah.
I've been over there and just... I love it over there too, but and just seeing what they generally eat, the locals, which is a lot... it's carb based.
A lot of veggies, a lot of noodles and rice, and
How'd you go?
Yeah, no, that was fine. Like, it was just about being cautious, being aware, I guess, is what you say. So it's not as though you can't do this or you can't do that. It's about being aware of what you were doing and doing it properly. So you'd need, obviously you need carbs for an energy source. So I'd try to eat the right type of carbs at the right time of the day. For lunch, I'd have a bit of rice, or I'd even have some potato wedges, which would fuel my afternoon session. But you do find how important it is to kind of to get some of those carbs when you're in that environment on the equator. You're heavily sweating and it's so hot, and so you do need to keep that carb intake up. Being a diabetic, obviously, I had to monitor it, make sure I was having the right amounts of insulin so I wouldn't crash.
Yeah.
But
and were you sweet with the? Did you bring your insulin from over here over to there? Or
yes.
Did, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Needed just take a letter from the doctor.
Yeah.
Because again, in depending on what countries is around the world, it's seen as a steroid. But I just had the prescription note from my doctor saying I've been a lifelong diabetic. I'm have to travel with these to survive, basically.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, I haven't had a problem. I've travelled around a fair bit, been to a fair few countries, and as long as I've had that note from the doctor, you can tend to take in your prescription medicines with you.
Okay. So what did you learn over in Thailand, mate? Just the values of Thai people, the land of smiles.
Yeah, the culture.
It's
an amazing culture and everybody's very supportive. I was taken in with some friends there, and they'd just give you the clothes off their back. Feet, they were, what would you say? They're not, obviously, they're, people over there aren't as well off as what we are over here in many different areas, but they just give you the shirt off their back.
Yeah.
Just it's a great culture.
Humble people.
Yeah.
And is there anything like food-wise that you learnt over there that you incorporate now?
I did some cooking classes and whatnot, and I do love my Thai food, but
love it.
Yeah, everyone. I guess everyone's a fan of Thai food. Just yep. You got to find that dish you like.
Mm.
But I like a quite big variation of foods, and Asian foods are a big favourite of mine. I wouldn't say I probably learn anything specifically to incorporate. They do use a lot of fish oil, and they even do use a lot of like brown sugar in their dishes. But it's I think the main point of it is it's all fresh food. They do have their McDonald's and fast foods and whatnot, but majoritively they're cooking for breakfast, lunch, dinner. They're not even really meal prepping for the week, you know. It's every breakfast, lunch and dinner cooking three meals a day.
Yeah.
And I kind of love that culture. It's still old time values.
Yeah. So did you have any fights over there or just training?
No, in I just trained. Yeah. First time was for 2 weeks, second time was for a month.
Yeah, okay.
Twice a day.
And how was it training with the Thais over there?
Oh, it was full on.
Different level,
again, because the humidity was what really takes it out of you.
Yeah.
So I was waking up. My general routine was I'd wake up, go to training, which would be about 7 a.m. in the morning, train for an hour till about 8. I'd come back. Then I'd have a walk or a run along the beach. Then I'd have a big, like, all-you-can-eat buffet breakfast, which is kind of like fruit salads and stuff like that. Then I'd relax for most of the middle of the day, really hot. I'd probably go into town, get a massage for lunch. Then I'd come back home, train again in the afternoon about 3, 4 p.m. for an hour, and then I'd go into town for the night. So
yeah, right. So
that was kind of – that was just every day for 2 weeks, 4 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because you see,
it was like a training holiday, so I was on a bit of a vacation as well. But I went over there specifically to train, and make the most of it. I had a fight when I got back, like 10 days after I got back.
How'd you go?
I had an MMA fight and I got choked out at the end of the first round. He took me
bit
down.
Bit of a rear naked choke.
Exactly.
He took
me down and choked me out.
So was that on the coast or
that was in Darwin?
In Darwin.
Yeah.
So, what promotion was that?
King of the Ring.
Yeah.
This is going back about 10 years ago, it was now. 8 years ago, I think.
Yeah. So do they get a fair few fights back then up that way?
Like Darwin? Well, Tim, who owns and head trainer at Fight 108, he's obviously in with a lot of different gyms around Australia. So we'd fly all around Australia. We had fighters. We went to Darwin a few times or like once a year. There'd be fights on the Gold Coast, Queensland, some down in Victoria.
Yeah.
A couple of guys have gone to Tasmania. A lot of fights kind of between Newcastle and, say, Wollongong, for example, which is like the main area just close to home.
You see a bit of a hub there, like down in Wollongong.
Yeah. Even the Central Coast here where we are,
it's growing.
Great. A lot of high-quality fighters
come from here. Like you look at Mitch Burkett that I had on the podcast a while ago. And then you're looking at some of the UFC talent that's starting to come through when you're looking at Jamie Mullarkey.
Jamie Mullarkey's just gotten the UFC. And Mitch Burkett, I do nutrition with him, help out with his weight cuts. He just fought the end of last year up at Queensland. Couple of other guys, Rick Alchin fights for ONE FC. A lot of some Muay Thai fighters as well that are constantly going over to Asia fighting in Thailand. Central Coast is a really high quality area for strikers for Muay Thai, kickboxing.
It's always been massive up here, like kickboxing and Muay Thai in general.
Yeah.
Especially no matter where it is on the coast, like, you know, because I grew up in Wong, so there was, you know, gyms in and around there, like with Rob Murdoch and crew, and then
his crew, still there. Talked to some of those guys too, all good guys. It's a good, coming from a martial arts, a combat, like I infer in my name, combat nutrition, just a lot of really genuine guys in that area.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So what's the main food groups that you utilize? I know it's sort of hard, like no sort of diet fits one person, you know, because some people just sort of blanket and go, keto is the way, you know, carnivore diet's the way. But what do you utilize and what supplements do you use, if any, or if it's just whole foods?
So first of all, we try to go with whole foods. That's where all your nutrients, vitamins and minerals come from whole foods. So if you're taking supplements, it's because you're lacking that part of the vitamin or mineral or whatever it is you're taking. You're lacking that in your diet, or you're a specific type of athlete that needs more of that in your diet. So that's where supplements come in handy. Supplement being the name to supplement what it is we're missing from the diet. So so first we try to go with whole foods. And then we'll, whatever is lacking or missing, we'll supplement with those. Some of the big key points are protein. A lot of people tend to not eat enough protein at each meal, whether that be for breakfast, lunch, dinner and snack. So one of the first key points we try to do is make sure that you're eating an adequate amount of protein at each meal. That's somewhere between 25, 35, 40 grams, depending on who you are and what your goals are. So that's lean meats and beans, tofu. Lean meats is like the real big one for your protein. Chicken, tuna, beef, lamb, anything like whitefish. Really important to have a balanced amount. Then carbohydrates. People tend to eat too many carbohydrates. So, excuse me. So it's not necessarily the saying, hey, carbs are bad, we can't eat carbs. It's most people are eating way too many carbohydrates at each meal. So again, we look at your goals, what you're doing, what your goals are, where you want to get to, and then we'll come up with the right amount we should be eating at each meal. And that tends to be cutting people way back. So for example, you might want 30 to 40 grams of carbohydrates at each meal. If you have a look at the average person that comes up, they might be 60, 70 grams plus.
Because you're looking at their training regime too, because if they're if they're doing X amount of training per day and they're burning,
they need a little bit more
tomorrow.
Exactly right. And that's kind of worked into the – we have a formula. So and it goes from sedentary to I call it elite athletes. So basically an office worker, somebody who's not doing anything all day long, sitting at the computer all day long, they're not going to burn as much as someone who is like the Mitchell Burkett or they're training 2-3 times a day, 5-6 days a week. So that's kind of worked into the initial formula where I ask you some questions, which it's also worked in how tall you are, how much you weigh and how old you are. And then it comes into how active you are, and it works out a little formula, how many calories you should be eating each day.
Yeah, okay. And, yeah, because I'm just thinking Wimp to Warrior.
Yep.
So have you worked in and around?
I have worked with some of those guys.
And how does that work out? Because that's just like fast-tracked. So then when you were to throw food and everything in the mix, how's that going?
Yeah, so again, it's
And if you don't mind just explaining what Wimp to Warrior is too, if that's all right.
Okay, well, so I haven't worked on the show. I've had a couple of the contestants have reached out to me before they started the show. And what that is wimp to warrior, kind of what the name describes, is an everyday person, somebody who's never done any type of combat training, never done much athletic training. Go from your normal everyday person that has never done any competitive training into a combat athlete and about to have their first fight. So it's
goes from
all to nothing, or nothing to all, in a matter of 8 weeks or 12 weeks.
Yeah, and where do they usually run that out of?
There's one in every country now. So there's SBG, Straight Blast Gym.
Yep.
Which usually run them, which was
Straight Blast out of Ireland. I'm thinking it.
Yeah, that's in Ireland.
Yeah.
But there's also one in Sydney. There's one in Texas. There's one in Parramatta.
Straight Blast?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They tend to be the gym behind the Wimp to Warrior. I'm forgetting the guy's name at the moment on the tip of my tongue, the guy who made them. But, yeah, they just tend to run out of the Straight Blast gyms, SBG.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting, eh? So, and because you do see some success too, but also not just health-wise what it does for people, like where it can build them up and fast track them, but just the mentally
and emotionally, yeah.
Especially if you go to that Wimp to Warrior and it's only a couple of weeks and you've gone physically to this,
yep.
And then you come out with a win on top of that, like just the mental high that
you go from top. There's what you say. You go from a nobody to an absolute winner in the space of kind of 3 months, and it's all you, your dedication, your commitment, surrounded by the right type of people who can take you to where you want to go. But it's just such a life changing experience for the people doing it. Yeah. We'll be running something similar with Tim Drury in a couple of weeks, month or so, which is just like a 6 week course like that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what's involved is I'll help out with your nutrition. Kind of give you your macro values, how much protein, fats, carbohydrates you should be eating each day. Tim does the training, so you can go in there once, twice a day, train six, seven days a week, twice a day, for a once-off price, 6 week course.
Nice.
And the winner, I think, we work it out off body weight percentages. So whoever loses the most percentage wins a prize.
That's awesome. Yeah. You know, and it's just good to having that competitive edge.
Yeah, that's right. That's the main thing. They will have like a group session, so they all have a banter and everything, you know, it's competitive and the winner gets to win a prize. So they love it.
Yeah, right.
A little competition. And
do any of them square off in the ring at any point? Or
they do some sparring.
Yep.
Yeah. These are more not so much the professional fighters, more casuals who are just coming in to, like I was saying, get some some more mental stimulation, some physical challenges, stuff like that. Then we have Tim has. He's got a fighters only class, so it's the guys that are training to fight or with a fight coming up in the future. Then you have the general class, which is everybody can just come along to punch a bag. And then he also does some kids classes, some women's only classes, so people can feel safe and secure and you know, train with their own like-minded people.
Yeah, well, that's it. You got to be careful of who you train with, eh? Like,
yeah.
Like levels wise.
Some gyms you can go to and you might have a nobody training with somebody who's...
And I've heard, you know, that can go south pretty quickly.
Yeah,
and
it does happen at some places. So you want to have a good trainer. You want to be evenly matched.
You do want to
be competitive. So you always want to have people around you who's better. Yeah. But you don't want to end up in some place who uses you as a test dummy.
That's it.
Yeah.
Either test dummy or if it's on the other hand where it's, you know, you got a fighter that's experienced but then you got some person that comes in that doesn't know too much and they want to make a name for themselves.
Off the street. Yeah. Want to challenge everybody and I'm the best street fighter.
Then
you get some guys who are really high-level technical strikers who you can just pick you apart.
Peace you up. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, it's...
Then come back to the gym, see you.
It's interesting to watch. Yeah.
So what's... So it sounds to me like bread and butter, like I'm thinking of disciplines that you're working with is Muay Thai, kickboxing, but what's some of the other disciplines that you've worked with martial arts, combat sports.
Yeah, so I do a lot of work with boxers down in Sydney. Just started working recently with Joel Camilleri, who he was the Australian middleweight title holder who just lost to Tim Zhu last year. That was a big fight, a main event. And, I've just recently started working with him. We've only literally just the last couple of weeks started talking about what foods we should be eating and thinking about whether he's going to move up or down a weight. But that's only someone new to the table, a boxer from – he's now in Brisbane, sorry. She's moved from Melbourne to Brisbane. But he's one of the probably the biggest names that I'm currently working with. Some other boxers out of Final Round Gym, Tyson Turner. He just won the Australian middleweight of the Pan Pacific belt. Alex Lindsay, she's actually my cousin, but she was an Australian judo title holder.
Okay.
So that's something a bit out of left field with the judo.
Still requires weight cutting.
Yes. Well, your boxers and your Muay Thai fighters, they tend to do a 24-hour weight cut. So they'll weigh in Friday night for their Saturday night competition. And when you get some of the grapplers with the BJJ guys, the judo guys, they're weighing in only 2-3 hours before their event. So we have to utilise different techniques as well for their weight cut.
Yeah.
The guys that are weighing in on the same day, the wrestlers, the judo guys and the BJJ guys, you don't want to dehydrate them too much because they don't have long enough to put that fluid back into their systems after cutting the weight.
Yeah, and how do you balance that out? Like, obviously without giving too much juice away, but when it's got to do with – because that's tricky when you're talking about throwing someone – straight into the sauna if you're throwing the sweatsuits and stuff like that on them to get them down and trying to balance the water and the water loading and all that sort of stuff too.
So exactly.
What's the tricky part about getting that right? Because everybody's so different.
Yeah. So there are a few techniques we like to utilise. One, as you're saying, is like what supplements we use. So after you dehydrate yourself, weight cut, fluid cut, something like that, it's really important to get those electrolytes back into you. Obviously, you have to weigh yourself on the scale before you drink those electrolytes again because it's going to add to the scale weight. So what we do is it's just a bit of a formula I come up with. I've been practicing. Yeah. Other people have come up with it. But you want to try to replace 600 ml of water for every 500 ml of fluid you lost. Mm. So, for example, we're about to sauna. You hop on the scale, you weigh 70 kilos. We hop in the sauna, you weigh, say you've needed to lose 1 kilo, you'd want to replace every 500 grams lost with 600 ml of fluid. So you've lost 1 kilo in the sauna. We want to drink 1.2 kilo or 1.2 litres of water after we've weighed in to replace what we've lost. So that's how fighters will lose a massive amount of weight, weigh in, and then go back, fight the next day, and they're back up to the size that they came from.
No, they just blow up. Yeah. It's crazy how much weight some people can put on.
So that's how we do it with an electrolyte. We'll cut out the electrolytes about 3 to 4 days before the sauna, and then your body is going to drop all its fluid.
Yeah.
And then we double up on the fluid after you weigh in. Your body fills back out again.
Yeah. Can we use, like, because you got the different fighting authorities and bodies that you got to, that it comes under to do with New South Wales state federal based mobs, but can we use IVs over here?
No.
They've cut that out.
Yeah. You've got combat sports as like the official governing body of all combat sports in Australia. Same over in America. They were allowed to use IVs, now they're not. We're not allowed to over here. We've probably got the strictest laws in all of the world when it comes to drug testing and stuff like that. They're not regularly tested, but if you're an Olympian, they're at like the highest level where they can't even have a certain amount of caffeine. Like you're limited to kind of one cup a day.
That's insane, even with caffeine.
Caffeine's a performance-enhancing drug.
Yeah.
So I think the legal limit off the top of my head is something like 320 milligrams. So off an average cup of coffee, I think you're talking about 100 milligrams.
Mm.
So what I'm saying is if you're about to compete, you're an Olympic athlete or you're a drug-tested athlete who's about to compete that day, you kind of know I'm not allowed to have 2 cups of coffee today because I'm competing.
Yeah. So even if you're sponsored by Red Bull, Just take a sip out of your can, champ.
That's right.
Do the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, Red Bull's got the caffeine in it as well. Yeah. And some of the – it's very rare, but you do see some athletes tested and they've got like a high level of caffeine, high level of aspirin. That's another illegal.
Aspirin?
Not, yeah.
Because I know
– it's like, a blood thinner.
That's
so,
it.
Yeah. So,
but how's that going to – I'm just thinking, right, of when you got – say TJ Dillashaw that got
EPO doping.
That's right. Yep. But that, I know that thickens up the blood.
So that's oxygenates the blood.
That's right. But then how, I'm just thinking of the difference between with aspirin and.
So blood thinning is you get bloods into the muscle quicker.
Mm.
So you'd be faster contractions. Well, like we're talking, you know, hundredths of a millisecond or whatever. But once they're at the Olympics, all these things matter. So,
or you're copping, you know, a shovel uppercut from Francis Ngannou and you need to get out of the way. Like, that's all that matters, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So once you're at the high level, all these little things start making a difference.
It's true.
That's why Olympic athletes, world champions and everything, you'll tend to find they're just on whole food diets, a lot of juices, fruit juices, vegetable juices, lean meats. They may supplement with like some fish oils and stuff like that, but you'll tend to see that the majority of the diet's whole foods, maybe a protein shake after training, but they avoid supplements because you do get a lot of cross-contamination issues.
Yeah. See, that's a good point that you're putting out there because that's where I've seen with some of the like UFC fighters and some of the high-profile ones, say with Francis Ngannou that I just mentioned, like, from what I've read and seen in interviews, that bloke, like, and looking at his physique, chisel, cut, massive, don't mess with the guy. He doesn't touch any supplements.
No,
it's
no.
all whole foods.
Well, he was...
He's scared of the cross-contamination.
Yeah, 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 yeah. We can go into that a bit if you like.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Dive deep, brother.
Something, I guess, look at Francis, and like we were saying, it's all hard work, isn't it? He was in the sand mines.
That's it.
And it's just... That's just... like you're working in the gym 24/7 to begin with. But get back into the supplements and the cross-contamination issues. I guess having a look at the whole COVID situation going on at the moment, people are starting to learn these things about how easy contamination can happen. Mm. So you see it's really important these days, they're spruiking and telling people to buy made in Australia, produced in Australia, manufactured in Australia, sourced in Australia. When you're buying food products or vitamins and minerals, that's what you want to have a look to. It says on the label. A lot of these things will come back to where they're bulking the sourcing the bulk ingredients. So a lot of these will come from China, Pakistan, India, where the growing conditions aren't so good, or they're made in, like I was saying before, how Australia has some of the strictest laws.
Yeah, because they might not have auditing bodies that look after
exactly
some of their food sources, and then who knows what creeps
so
in.
So we've got fentanyl as an opioid, a big drug, a very deadly prescription drug, and that's being made in bulk in China, right? So like you're saying, if we don't have these auditing bodies and one factory is making a prescription drug, they sell off their...
And you're using it in the same vat or something
exactly
like that.
Exactly right. So they might make their batch of fentanyl and sell it to the pharmacies, and then the next bloke that comes in is me wanting a batch of multivitamins made up. So they make them in the same vat, not knowing now they're being contaminated with illegal or prescription substances. So that's the big thing, is you want to have a look at where the what you're buying, where it originally come from.
Yeah.
You want to make sure it's made or sourced in a safe country.
Yeah, because I've heard of some athletes where they've been aligned with whatever supplement company.
Yeah, yeah.
And then whatever the product was that they were taking, they got it tested.
Yes.
And they found traces of meth.
Right. Yeah.
You know? And this is pretty – and it was a big company because this is a high-profile athlete. But, yeah, you got to be –
yeah, I've heard of a lot of them. I've heard a lot of them. The John Jones situation, I was all over that when he got busted for a contaminated supplement.
What do you think of that, though? It seems like he's always in deep water for shit like that.
He is. Yes, he is. I guess when you've been caught for this and that, it's hard to kind of defend him for one thing. But what I'm going to say is I was kind of caught up. I knew what was going on with that company at the moment. They were making creatine over in Germany.
Was it GAT?
Yes.
GAT.
Yeah, that was the company.
Yeah.
So they were one of the biggest creatine makers, which bought all their supply, their creatine supply from the Germans, and then it come back to be contaminated with I can't remember what the substance is now, but they cut it. They cut creatine with it to give it a better desire, higher desired effect. It's illegal for athletes. Unfortunately, he's taken some, or he was sponsored by the brand that was doing it. That's how I knew at the time that his sponsored brand was already in trouble for doing it. So it was kind of one and one made two on that scenario.
Yeah.
But then he'd been caught with cocaine and drink driving and whatnot, so it's hard to defend him on those issues.
Running into pregnant ladies and breaking their arms.
But I guess I guess the point I'm just saying is the contaminated supplement issue, it was known about. It is known about in the industry before or while it was going on with when he got caught with the contaminated sup.
That's it. And because you'd have some unsavory characters that are working for some of these companies and they – might think, oh, if they add something that's going to hook people onto a certain product.
Well, possibly, definitely. And that's, I guess, probably more in the smaller batch industries. Like someone like GAT is a worldwide global brand.
Mm.
So if you're going to like contaminate your products to hook people in, I don't know, it'd be a very cost-effective method. I don't know. But like you said, I guess if some people are putting little bits of meth in their pre-workouts, you're getting people hooked bringing them back to buy more.
If it's just a touch.
Yeah.
If they're like, okay, this is...
This is doing something. I'm at the gym now and
it's
I'm...
It's pre-workout. Yeah. I think it's just high elevated caffeine levels. Like, nah, it's pretty much like just smoking a bloody ice pipe.
Exactly.
There,
some of your pre-workouts are pretty dodgy. You've got to be careful and what you're getting there, where they're coming from.
Way too much. Yeah. Like I've had them in the past and it's like you feel like your anxiety's going through the roof and you're just shaking.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
So this ain't normal, man. Like
they're high level doses of vitamins, like especially beta-alanine, which gives you that twitchy and tingly feeling. So, for example, you might only need, say, 600 milligrams a day and that's enough to keep your vitamin levels at peak.
Mm.
They might be putting in like 2.5 grams into the batch, so you're getting these effects. So it's making you feel like, oh, this is doing something to me. You want to buy it again and again and again. But also if you are on a lot of health platforms or pages on social media, you do see especially a lot of younger ladies saying, oh, I don't like these pre-work, like constantly saying, I bought this pre-workout, which made me feel like this. Also, it's a repeating issue for especially young women getting bad feelings off pre-workouts.
Yeah.
But say everything's body weight ratio as well. So if you're a bigger guy, you can take a lot more than what a 50-kilo woman can take. If you're a 100-kilo man, you can take double to what she can.
Mm.
So if all of a sudden you've got a boyfriend, girlfriend, 100-kilo male, 50-kilo woman, they're both taking the same amount for pre-workout, she's going to be feeling it way more than what he is.
Yeah, she's going to be... running 1,000 miles an hour on the treadmill.
Yeah. So everything is body weight specific as well. Same for vitamins and minerals. Something men and women probably should consider if they're going as a couple to the gym.
And because of the different hormones too, because testosterone, estrogen.
Progesterone and estrogen versus testosterone dominant. You're exactly right. So,
mate, well, you're all over this, like, because – it comes down to a science, and like I've seen a lot more so in the last, I'd say, probably 5 years from what I've noticed. Like I'm thinking of, because I love mixed martial arts and, when it's UFC and I'm thinking of some of the high profile fighters that I've followed in the past and where they've been not, their weight cutting has been a bit all over the shop, and then you've had... The first one that I saw was like big name was Mike Dolce.
Yeah.
And just the science that's behind
that. I've had a few interactions with Dolce going back when I first got into it.
Yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I've spoken to Dolce. I've spoken to George Lockhart. I've spoken to a lot of the top guys. Rob Wolf.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of Rob Wolf, and he's a big role model of mine. Coming from, I'm initially a butcher as well, my background. So that's why I like to work with the whole foods specifically.
Yep.
Lean meats, fresh fruits and vegetables. I don't really say nothing's off limit, but we got to try to limit those packet foods more. and try to stick to whole fresh foods.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when I first, as I said, I got into it initially because I'm a type 1 diabetic. So I reached out and was speaking to a lot of these guys. Rob, someone put me onto Rob saying, hey, the way you're treating your diabetes is the way this guy is suggesting people should treat their diabetes. Mm. So we kind of come at it from independently, both arrived at the same principles. So that's communicated with a lot of these top guys, and Mike was one of the first ones who got right into the weight cutting and really kind of perfected that science. We've had a few consults with him going back, say, 8 years ago or so. Had a few phone chats with him and whatnot, saying that was where I really wanted to go in his direction.
Yep.
So
that has benefited you greatly. Oh, 100%. With all these guys?
He'd do his, like, I'd just jump on and listen to his podcast all the time.
Mm.
And that's how I got into it. Like, they're all high-level guys. Dr. Rhonda Patrick, who's always on the Joe Rogan podcast.
How good is she?
Yeah, she's...
Do you know, just listening to her, just... And because I've listened to her a few times and follow her on different social media outlets, and because I'm just thinking of, like, the last time I heard her speak about just the importance of vitamin D.
Yeah, yeah.
And me being a quadriplegic, like, I don't have, like, a lot of the muscles around the diaphragm working like they used to before my accident when I was able-bodied. And what she was talking about with COVID and just a different – levels of people that were with vitamin D, I'm talking about the people that were passing away,
vitamin D deficient, yeah.
And then everybody that was surviving, didn't matter who, how old, young, whatever, they had, you know, good levels of foundation, like good baseline or above that. And I'm like, man, like, I got to up the IU levels. I was already taking it, I was taking 1,000 IUs, a day, but I'm like, no, I'm bumping up to 4,005.
Yeah, right.
Because it helps the from what she was saying, and I might be butchering this, talking about, like, you know, just trying to explain what she was putting out there, but that it helps out to do with, it's an R2 receptor that's in your lungs.
Yes.
And that just helps your respiratory system.
Yes.
And I'm like, man, like, I'll take anything to get to get an edge, and especially if it's something as simple as vitamin D, that can really elevate, you know, the respiratory system.
If I can remember correctly, I'm probably going to butcher it too. I haven't researched it myself before hopping on. But it's the vitamin D and COVID are competing for the same receptors. So to having more of the vitamin D is you're blocking COVID from attaching themselves to the R2 receptors.
Yeah.
Also, obviously, it's really important for immune function, immune health, and it's also really important for testosterone production. It's like vitamin D is very similar to a hormone, very close to a hormone.
Precursor. Right?
Yeah. It's really important for hormonal health and as far as I lost my track of thought there.
I've heard I don't know much about it, but supposedly that's benefits also to do with the lungs and the receptors, but licorice tea.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's really good for the whole GIT, gastrointestinal tract.
Yep.
Yeah, really good. Gut health as well.
Big on that, mate.
Yep.
Gut health.
Yep.
Like probiotics.
Yeah.
Like, because I take it since 2012, I've been taking Inner Health Plus.
Yep.
Every day.
A multi-strain. You want like a good multi-strain, say 10 or 12 different strains.
Mm.
Multi-strain bacteria, they're called, and probiotics, so good for your immune system again.
100%, because I got put on a control study, and this was run by multiple, like with the unis down in Sydney, some of the other hospitals down there as well. And that was, specifically with quads or quadriplegic. So, and then I found out I was, because it was just to see how it would go with the immune system and how that would balance out. And I found out that within that control peer-reviewed study that I was actually taking the probiotics and, you know, I could feel the effects, and I'm like...
Awesome.
And I'm sitting in the office, because this is when I worked in Sydney every day, traveling down there up from the coast, and I'm in an office, people are sick, cruising around, and I'm, you know, supposed to have a, my immune system supposed to be a little bit lower than everybody else's. That's why, you know, I got put on the study in the first place.
Yep.
And that's generalized with quads. And, you know, sleeping next to my wife, she's crook, sniffling everywhere, nothing. I have not, like, straight up, and I've been, like I said before, taking the probiotic since then, I have not had the common cold.
Yeah.
Since then.
Yep.
Like, and I that's been around it. Crook people all the time.
Yeah, no, I believe
nothing.
That.
Nothing.
Probiotics is one of the things I put my fighters on when they're cutting weight, because, again, like we're talking about, when you're cutting weight, your immune system's lacking. So we're not feeding you everything that you need. We're draining you. So your immune system starts to fail a little bit.
So what are you pumping into these people?
So probiotics is one of them.
But what in what form though? Like
just the capsules.
Just the capsules.
So like, it'll be. I use the Bioceuticals. Mm-hmm. I think it's a 12 different biotics in 50 billion per capsule or something like that. So again, going back to techniques we use for weight cutting, one of the other things that we'll do is we'll cut the fiber out of their diet, because fiber is all your leafy vegetables, and people can tend to hold up to 4 kilos worth of fiber in their gut. I'm not saying everybody, but some people, especially people that aren't going to the toilet every day, they might be really common to have 1 or 2 kilos worth of roughage just stored in your gut there.
Really?
So from about 2 weeks out, we'll start to lower down the fiber. We increase their water, we increase their electrolytes, what that does is we try to flush the system. So they need to be eating at a calorie deficit as well. So because they're training so much, they're training 2 times a day, they're being very active, and now they've cut back on their food intake, their immune system can kind of drop. And this is really common to see a lot of fighters getting the cold and the flu coming up leading into fight week if they're not cutting weight properly. So what I try to do is we get the right type of food, something like eggs for breakfast, no fiber, healthy fats, protein. Mm. Same thing for lunch and dinner, some lean meats, a carbohydrate source like some white rice or something, and then we might go some potatoes or a bit of sweet potato. But again, we just got to be cautious of how much fiber they're having for lunch and dinner. And then depending on where they're going for the fight, so especially if they're flying overseas, we want them to have like vitamin C, probiotics, maybe even a multivitamin, depending on what type of foods that they are eating. So anyway, probiotics is one of the most important things that I try to give my fighters when they're cutting weight. Day in, day out, really. It's one of those things that's almost essential.
Mm.
If you're eating enough dairy, if you're eating enough fruits and vegetables, you can get away without having them.
Mm.
But if your diet, probiotics are one of those things that really help, really take you to the next level for gut health and your immune system.
100%. Yeah. Do you throw kombucha in the mix?
Yeah, I make my own kombucha. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Throw the Scoobies?
The Scobies.
Scobies, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Scobies, yeah.
I've made my own kombucha for a few years. Again, I recommend to the guys, like we try to drink mostly water, sparkling water. Kombucha, really good for gut health, really good for probiotic content, and especially if you're getting one of the homemade ones or it hasn't been heat treated, that's when it's really
So with some of the stuff that's out in the market, the more commercialized stuff, is that?
Yes, it's, again, it comes down to a lot of our food and safety laws, so they've got to be homogenized, so they have to be boiled and
just
then,
like milk.
That's where you tend to find the better milks are that non-homogenized, and your whole milks have a higher nutrition level.
Do people sketch out on that though? Because you've heard of, you know, the reason of why they heat treat it.
Yeah.
And people, because I don't know if it's not tuberculosis, but people catching weird
sort
of funky things. But
I think there are some like naturopathic ways to kind of go around it. So you're still following the, I'm not sure, I'm not in the dairy industry, I haven't been. So I buy the unhomogenized milk myself. Yep. I buy the Australian, the Norco or the unhomogenized.
Okay.
but I'm not sure.
Can you buy that off the shelf?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
There's the Norco, which is 100% Australian, or I think there's the Dairy Farmers as well,
yep.
Which is the cream on top.
Yeah, right. Mate, and going back into the background that you were talking about, you being a butcher.
Yeah.
So, and being from out west Dubbo.
Yeah.
Do you ever get the hunting skills on and get out and have a crack? Or
yeah. What? Actually, only 2 weeks ago I went out to Dubbo and we didn't go hunting, but my family are all still out there with property and whatnot.
Mm.
So I went out there and knocked over a few lambs for the freezer. Yeah. That was only 2 weeks ago. So I've got a freezer full of lamb at the moment.
Oh, beautiful.
Which is, yeah. I don't know how much we can divulge, but the lamb was running around the paddock and it was – in the freezer, not even 12 hours later.
How good's that? So, fresh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and butcher it all up yourself.
Butchered it all up myself, did it all myself, yeah. Uncle's farm, he's got his property and he's got some chooks and got everything you need.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What about some of the ferals that are out there? Because deer's getting around like no tomorrow, even up not far from here, just up at Yarramalong.
Yeah.
Like there.
A lot of deer around here.
Out there. And that's fresh. Lean, organic meat.
My father's side of the family, big on that. They'd catch some wild pigs all the time.
Yeah.
What they'd do out there, and this is going back a while ago as well, they'd set up pig traps. And so you'd catch them without harming them. There'd be like a cage where you put some food in there so they could get in, like those old fish traps where you could get in and you couldn't
get out.
So you wouldn't harm them. But what we'd do is we'd catch them and then we'd raise them up, fatten them up, keep them for a couple of years in the paddock until they were full grown, and then we'd knock them over for the freezer.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
And that's so – and they're going to have a lot less – like parasites and stuff like that when you – because obviously you're looking after them and treating them.
Yeah, we'd take the younger ones and raise them up as like almost bottle fed.
Yeah, okay.
And some of the older ones you do want to be careful of with parasites and whatnot. And out there –
but it's like any animal, like if it's deer, pigs, like, you know, even
– yeah. Well,
you know,
my father, that's how he used to make a bit of money back in the old days. He'd round up, go pig hunting and take them to the local bush pig abattoir out near Burke there. This is going back. I was only a young little kid.
Yeah.
I've
always wondered that, you know, so because I've even been thinking about like the deer that you get up here at Yarramalong and parts like that, and where like what the process is. Well, how can you legally – because I'm thinking of the amount of homeless people out there. I'm just thinking if you could just knock off all this free-running meat and their ferals, they're ruining, you know, all the soil and the land and who knows what over here anyway.
Yep.
But what's the process if you knock that over and you – if you can give it to someone or sell it?
Like, so, you can't. As far as I'm aware, you can keep it yourself, butcher it, keep it, eat it yourself, but you can't sell it or you can't even give it away. I think if you were, I think you can sell them to the abattoirs, but it's for pet food.
Really?
Any of the wild animals, you can't legally sell them.
They got to change that up.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely better ways we could, better things we could come up with to be able to utilize these. Again, it comes back to a lot of Australia being so strict with the food safety laws and parasites and meat standards and stuff like that. So they have to be farmed animal or raised in a farm environment, slaughtered legally and then passed on to the butcher shops and whatnot.
True.
Otherwise, if you were as a hunter, I think you can sell them to abattoirs that are specifically for pet foods.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure that's the law. I'm not 100% familiar with it. Even, for example, my family having farms, I couldn't go out there and butcher up some animals and sell them. That's illegal to do it as well. You got to send them off to the abattoirs so they're slaughtered by law under whatever licensing they've got, and everything's kept at the refrigerator temperatures and everything's monitored and checked and ticked along the way. Tick all the boxes along the way. It's crazy.
Yeah, long methods there before it gets to your bloody plate.
I worked at, going back a year or two ago, I was working at a paddock to plate farm.
Nice.
So they do everything on the farm and sell it directly to you. But we still had all those laws in between. So we couldn't kill anything on the farm. It'd have to go to the abattoirs. It'd have to come back. It'd have to be temperature checked along the way.
Jesus.
We had to cross so many.
I wonder what standards you can have, like if you wanted to run a mini abattoir, you know.
So. Yeah, so you can open up one. I was just talking to this bloke out, I think it was out somewhere in Ningen, and he opened up like a naturopathic abattoir.
What?
Yeah.
Explain that to me, please.
Yeah, so first time I heard of it, so you've got to stun the animals with like a bolt gun to the head, stun them, then they get their throat slit, then they get skinned and bled out, and then they get cleaned. Anyway, the way he's cleaning them is he's not using any water. He's using ozone lights.
Yeah.
So apparently he's made his own kind of backyard abattoir. Or when I say backyard, I mean it's a high notch facility.
And how do these farm? Yeah, and what do you mean the ozone with the lights? How does this work?
So ozone is like a sterilizing light. So instead of washing the meat, he's spraying it with a light.
Yeah, it's like ultraviolet.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a funny story. This is going back 2000 and, oh, I don't know, when was it? 2007, I think it was. I was on a construction site. This is when I was in a carpentry and building. And we had those lights, right, but they were filters for pools.
Yep.
So when the water would run through, it would run through this stainless tube, right? And you could see there was a little porthole where you could see the ultraviolet light. So then it would just burn all the impurities away and then you got the fresh water coming through. But this plumber thought it'd be a good idea to pull the tube out, turn it on. He's pulled it out, turned it on, bang, flash burn straight away. Just, you know, like when you're welding and you're not wearing a mask. But it was just instant sunburn.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what this guy's doing, cleaning and putting them through a UV light and
sterilizing them. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's only a new top state-of-the-art abattoir out west. Obviously, you've got Dubbo, big Fletcher's there at Dubbo. They're doing a lot of international export lamb over to Saudi Arabia and China and stuff like that. But yeah, this is just a small guy who's made it all up himself and comes from a naturopathic background.
Good on him.
And yeah, so I'm interested to stay in touch with him and see how he goes. Only just opened.
Yeah.
So he's looking for, you know, young farmers, new farmers, smaller farmers to put their cattle and sheep through there. That his abattoir before sending them to the stockyards or to the butcher shops and restaurants and whatnot.
Yeah,
good. So, yeah, interesting to see how he goes.
Yeah, 100%. That's very interesting. But so jumping back to the fighters.
Yeah.
You engage with whatever fighter it may be, whatever discipline. So what's the general – when do you engage with a fight – when they're looking at a fight camp and it might be, say, your 8 to 12 weeks, right? But where do you come into the mix? Where and when?
So only kind of once a week chat. That's really it. Once a week we'll have a chat from about 8, 10, 12 weeks out.
Okay.
Again, depending on what your goals are. So I also look after a lot of guys who aren't fighters, who aren't athletes, who just want to lose weight or gain weight. So all we do is we just talk once a week about meals, what they have eaten, what we're going to eat, and then any supplement suggestions and stuff like that. With the fighters, it's really the same thing. They've got their fight coaches or their boxing coach, Muay Thai coach, whoever it was. So they're their main coach. They'll go to training with every day. They might see me once a week and we'll have a chat. Okay, what's your weight? Compare to what it was last week, compare to what it was, what we want to be at next week or what we want to be at in the future when the weigh-in's at. Mm. And then we talk about how we're going to get there. So we might have to lower the carbohydrate intake a bit if they're on weight or if they're ahead of time, we can give them a little bit more food for the following week. So we try to take it week by week for these guys, just for that back 8 to 12 weeks. Ideally, what we want them to do is wake up Friday morning, have breakfast, chill out for most of that day and walk on the scale. We don't want them dropping too much weight in the sauna. We just want that. I don't want them losing any more than like 1 to 2 kilos on that last day, because that's a safe amount we can put back on after we weigh in before the fight. Once we start to get over the 2 kilo mark, once we're starting to get 3, 4, 5 kilo, that's when the dehydration starts to creep in, yeah, and we start to get on the unsafe territory. So that's what I'm here to avoid, try to saunering too much off on that last day. Yeah. Rehydrate properly, and then you walk into the ring, cage, happy days. Mm. Again, your fight coach is your main trainer. I'm just here for the nutrition protocols and yep, just some of those little pointers which will help you drop weight and bounce, put it back on the next day. That's one of the big things we do with fighters. We want them to kind of bounce back.
Mm.
So again, we wouldn't use those techniques on a normal person, because what we're doing there is we're dropping, might be a 5 kilo difference. So mm, you're dropping 2.5 kilos on that Friday and you've put 2.5 kilos back on by Saturday. So that's not a normal thing we do with every person. No. It's just specifically to make weight and then to come back in the cage or the ring the bigger, stronger person.
100%. And the dangers, because that's what I wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
And just the importance of having like someone like yourself, where it's polishing the edges for these,
yeah,
people before they jump in into the ring, and they do it, you know, safely. And because the importance of doing weight cutting the right way, yep, for whoever that person, because like I said, everybody's different, but man, you hear some horror stories. Exactly. Of weight cutting.
Well, they're just like you said, everybody's different. To give you an example, I recently spoke to a 15-year-old female who was a Muay Thai fighter. And she wanted to have a consultation and talk about if she's doing everything's right and whatnot. Anyway, point of the story is, 15-year-old female who just started off, and I thought, yeah, you know, you're doing everything right.
Mm.
On the other hand, I've spoken to 30, 35-year-old males who've had 50, 60 fights, and I think, whoa, how did you get this far with the way you're cutting weight? Or I think, you're doing things that are so detrimental before.
It do long-term damage.
Yeah, yeah. Leading up to your fight, you're doing some things that are so detrimental to your performance. So there's such a big variation of information. So it is important to kind of get someone you trust, tied in with someone who will communicate with your coach about how you train, because everything matters. So we want to know how you're training, how well you're training, if you have enough energy levels through each training session, because if you don't have enough energy to perform at training, or something's up, we're not eating the right foods, mm, or you're not eating at the right times, or the diet's completely wrong altogether.
Mm.
So all of these things matter. We'll have a look at everything and try to layer them up, because, again, once you get up to those high-level athletes, all those little things, they start to matter.
Mm. 100%. It's all those little things that, you know, you can either move forward and healthy and jump in the ring, or you, yeah, can go down south and... Because you hear people, you know, passing away and all sorts of stuff.
And that, yeah, exactly.
Because their just body is so dehydrated, exactly, and they can't recover.
Yeah. So, again, like I was saying, I like to get into 8 to 12 weeks before you fight.
Mm.
So we can make a safe, steady, slow drop over those 8 to 12 weeks. Walk on the scale and walk into the ring. It's pretty common in the fight industry, fight game, guys eating whatever they want, training it like... not knocking them, eating whatever they want, sugar and training and as hard as they want. Yeah. And then they get to that last week and go, oh, shit, now I've got to lose 8 kilos. And so they're doing it in the last 4 or 5 days. That's what's bad.
Yeah. So that's just throwing your body into a spin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's, or eating crap and your performance will suffer.
Yeah. That's, if you can do it slowly over a 2-3 month period, you're going to have no worries. But if you don't think about it, don't plan or prepare, and you're eating whatever you want, doing your training, that's fine.
Mm.
But if you haven't dropped the weight or haven't gradually been dropping the weight and you leave it all for that last week, mm, that's when you get those real big problems for that last 2 or 3 days, because they'll stop drinking water or they won't eat anything altogether. I like most of my guys, if we've worked together for 8 or 12 weeks, mm, most of my guys are having breakfast the morning they're weighing in. And that,
yeah, okay.
And it's very common, people without a nutritionist or whatnot, they won't eat for a day and a half, 2 days before they weigh in. It's just about they don't know, or yeah, they're eating the wrong type of foods, and so they're really torturing themselves to make that weight. When if you're more aware and you understand the whole mechanisms of nutrition, okay, we can do this safely and I don't have to cause so much stress to my body.
Major stress. Mate, want to jump into some products that you're pushing out there and that I get excited about, and when it's along the lines of mycelium and mushroom extracts and powder.
Yep.
And talking about that, because just behind you, behind your head up there, I've got the lion's mane and the cordyceps from
Lifecycle. Yeah, that's one of my favourites.
Yeah, so I've been taking them for a while now, just pumping it in the coffee and having a crack, mate. But talk to me about the powers of mycelium.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty new science, the mycelium mushroom, medicinal mushrooms. I both actually had both of those just before I come here. That's like my little meeting formula. Or my pre-workout formula is lion's mane and cordyceps. I find lion's mane specifically shown a lot of benefits for the brain health. I think it's really important for combat athletes, like everything we've been talking about. But one thing with lion's mane, it's shown in clinical trials to help regenerate new neurons in the brain.
Yes.
So
yes.
Helps with like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. It's shown to benefit people with those. I've got a family history of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. So I've always been into brain health. Again, something I've just done as a personal hobby, which has joined into my career now. So medicinal mushrooms are really good for brain growth, yeah. That some of the other ones that they come with, they've got your turkey tail.
Yeah, the biohacker set.
The biohacker set, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I sell a few of those from Lifecycle up in Byron Bay. They've got the Kakadu plum. Again, it kind of ties in with everything we've just spoken about you want to know where your supplements come from. So these are sourced in Australia, grown in Australia, manufactured in Australia. You do want to be careful of some of the ones you're getting from China or Pakistan or India, because they're not grown under the best conditions. And they could come with contaminations, which could just even like a Roundup contamination. So they're spraying the field with Roundup, then they're growing their fruits, vegetables, whatever, mushrooms in this case. So
that's how they're getting contaminated. Because it doesn't matter if you wash it.
No.
It's still within the product.
The chemicals inside the.
That's right. Leaks in.
Exactly. So that's a lot of thing where people don't understand about contamination issues. It's, for example, you're eating your grapes and the grapes have been sprayed with Roundup. That's where one of these big contamination problems come from, is that you've got what's called your dirty dozen fruits. So they're 12 fruits like grapes, berries. I'm using grapes as an example because it's one of your biggest ones. You eat them straight off the vine raw, generally without washing them. So sometimes they're covered with that film.
Are you telling me stuff I can't eat now?
No. There's some stuff you just need to be more cautious and go, I need to give these a bit of a rinse under the tap.
Right.
These could have been sprayed. So the dirty dozen is 12 fruits, which they say is better to buy organically because they haven't been treated. But if you do buy them off the shelf, not such a problem, but it's a good idea to give them a rinse and just make sure you're getting any of these residues off. Apples, you get that wax around the apple. You want to give them a rinse off because you don't know what is in that wax.
That's it.
You know what I mean? So that's where a lot of these contamination issues that people don't quite understand. It's just from these simple things from sprays and not rinsing the foods.
Yeah.
Ended up contaminated something. It's like going.
Well, was it Hep B? Or I'm thinking of those berries.
Yeah.
The frozen ones coming from.
Yes. Yes.
Over in China.
Yeah, exactly right.
Got to watch out, man.
Because they'll grow those berries in like sewer plants. Or the rice would be grown amongst sewage.
Come on.
So that's how that happens. It's a contamination issue. So we're not
just a small one.
Yeah. So it's not
fecal matter running through your berries.
Exactly. So it's not like what we said with the supplements that people are trying to contaminate this product for a reason. These are cross contaminations which aren't meant to be happening or they're doing it because it's seen as a fertilizer, but they aren't aware of being in a third world country. They aren't aware of the health issues at the end of the final product being consumed with having on people.
Yeah, so because that's good. Like with you know, we've lost.
Going back to again what I said about Australia being having the highest level of food standards.
Yep.
That's why when you're buying foods, it's always a good idea. You want them to come from Australia, New Zealand, Canada. They're the three countries with, like, we've got the highest level of standards.
And supplements too. If you can get them too.
Well, supplements come from food. So I kind of lump them in
at the end of the day.
When I'm saying foods. Yeah, foods, food products. Yeah. Yep.
And what's the difference? Is one better than the other when you got the mycelium mushroom powder? Or if it's the powder or the extract, is there one better to take than the other because of the – I'm just thinking of how it's extracted and the process of it when it's going through the production cycle, you know, if it's the actual – what you're taking there with the liquid or if it's the actual powder itself.
I reckon the liquids are better in pretty much all – in just about every form.
Yeah.
So when you're buying your supplements – a lot of them will be in either powdered or liquid. Liquid is generally a better extraction method, so you'll be able to, there'll be more bioavailable nutrients will be extracted through the extraction process with a liquid compared to a powder.
Mm. Do you know how they extract it with the liquid?
Yeah, so it's either an alcohol or a like a petroleum base. That is what extracts the nutrients, being whether it be alcohol. Well, alcohol is
well,
like
people
a
sketch out
petroleum
on that
as well.
Because it's alcohol, you know what I mean? Like if it's percentages of that?
Yes and no. One thing I have found out is I wasn't aware when I first started off is you want to be careful with people's religions. Stuff like that. Some religions, especially down in Sydney, I work with a lot of Muslims. So you want to be careful about they're not allowed to have any alcohol products.
True.
So, for example, they won't buy any liquid extracts.
They'll be taking the powders.
They'll go to the powders.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's the same for everywhere. People, all different types of people have their own laws and even foods, diet-wise. If I'm speaking to Mormons or... They can't eat shellfish and so it's quite eye-opening when you do talk into a variety of people. You have to respect their religion as well or their culture as far as what they can and can't have as well.
Yeah, because we're so diverse over here with cultures and religions. And like a melting pot over here, and that's a good thing. And it builds up, you know, with yourself and with the different angles that you're going to go to, but probably knowing sort of a bit of a middle ground too, what works best overall,
Yeah, exactly. So if we come back to the basics and just keep these general principles. Mm. So it's not like – it's never going to work if I've got no – if I don't have any give or take. Here, this is what you have to have for breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Mm.
I don't want to hear anything about it. That's what you're doing.
Mm.
It's never going to work for both of us, or it might work for three people out of 100. You know what I mean? So we need to be need to kind of stick to the principles rather than everything having to be what I say it is. Mm. It's what are the principles? So rather than saying you can only eat fish, well, it's meats. So surely out of all meats, you're going to like either fish, chicken, beef, lamb. You don't. It's not that you have to have one or the other, but let's try to come up with some variations, which are the best ones. So that way you've got a bit more variation when you're prepping your meals as well. You don't have to eat the same thing for breakfast, lunch and dinner. Mm. You can go, okay, well, today I've got 150 gram worth of meats. I can choose fish, lamb, chicken, whatever I want. I've got 1 cup of root vegetables. I can choose potato, sweet potato, carrot, broccoli, beetroot, or then I've got 2 cups of green leafy vegetables, so I can choose whatever type of green leafy I want, spinach, broccoli, cauliflower. Yep. So we try to come up with just
And is there anything wrong with that when – because I see some people talk about oxalates and stuff to do, and when you're talking back about with stuff, you might have 1 or 2 kilos of gear running, sitting in your stomach. Is there anything people should avoid? Because I'm hearing people that just want to hit up the carnivore diet because they're talking about the oxalates and how that can affect you if you wanted to throw that in the mix, mate.
So, again, it's person dependent. So I can't just go, well, Jake, I want you on a vegan diet or I want you on a carnivore diet, or we need to get there first. So whether that be a process of elimination, we start monitoring your diet and going, okay, this is working, that's not working. Best kind of way to start is macro counting. So we work out how much protein, fats, carbohydrates you need at each meal, and then we've got a list of 20 different foods which are all kind of similar in values. So you're preparing your plate. We want 20 grams of protein, 30 grams of carbohydrates, 15 grams of fats, something like that. And then there's a list of foods which it's got, okay, these are the best carbohydrates, proteins, fats. So you can mix and match from your sheet. Okay, I'll have 150 grams of chicken breast. I'll have half a sweet potato and I'll have half a cup of rice or something like that. So you've got a sheet to pick your macro food from, and that way you've got a lot more variation and it's not so boring and you don't tend to fall off the wagon. When it's just so cut and dry where it's okay, for breakfast I want you to have a Weet-Bix, for lunch I want you to have a sandwich, for dinner I want you to have chicken breast and sweet potato. You're going to get results after that 10 to 12 weeks, but you're going to be bored. And
So I
one of the best ways is
some people want to mix it up.
So I've got a, I just call it a cheat sheet, which is just interchangeable foods, which are all similar values.
Nice.
That way you can just, you can have it on your fridge or have it in front of your face and go, okay, I don't feel like beef today. I'll swap it for chicken or tuna or fish or lamb or
Going back to the shrooms. So, do you source and run some of your own variations?
Yes.
And how bloody hard is it? Because you were talking about trying to get gear from whether it's in Australia or overseas, and if it ticks the boxes, it's not contaminated. How hard is it to source the right gear?
A lot of conversations with manufacturers, and you've got to try to trust them. So one of the big things is when you go to China is you get like the fake manufacturers. So you get people buying it from the manufacturers but claiming that they manufacture it themselves. So they're the one – that's what you've got to be careful of, because you don't know where it's coming from. So you don't know initially what that manufacturer is making. Like I was saying, he could be making his fentanyl and his multivitamin in the same batch. And then he's selling it to the next bloke who's claiming he's a manufacturer. No, I make this multivitamin. I only make multivitamins. It's not contaminated with anything else. Okay, I believe you. I trust you. I'll buy some. Oh, yeah, that wasn't too bad. Now I'll sell it. That's where you've got to be careful of. So what I've done is I've just tried to stick to Australia purely, talk to the manufacturers here, see where they're getting it from. They're farming it themselves. Like this Life Cycle Mob, they farm it themselves. They extract it themselves and do it, bottle it all themselves. I get mine from a guy over in Western Australia. So I sell Life Cycle. They're top-notch quality and I'll definitely rate them. But I also sell like a home brand, which is the powdered ones. When I say home brand, I just mean it's my brand. And they come from Western Australia. A pharmaceutical company over there. They've just, again, a couple of young blokes, a couple of young nutritionists. One's a nutritionist, one's a teacher. They've just started up their own lab. So they extract their own vitamins and minerals. So I buy bulk off them. I might buy 5 kilos and then package it up into, you know, 500 grams.
Yeah, nice. And I can see you're writing your botanicals, mate, and along the lines of that you got CBD. So, and what you're pushing out there. So the powers of CBD, but also if you wanted to mention something else in whatever the botanical family may be, and what's important, you know, there's a whole host and millions of plants out there, but if there's something else you want to mention as well.
CBD is very underrated and undervalued in Australia at the moment. Really good for brain health again. So some of these things like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, it's full of healthy fats and cannabinoids. So we've got our CBD receptors all through our bodies, which is one of them controls our immune system, which is the CBD2 receptor. The CBD1 receptor is only in our head, which is what gets you high off the THC. So the CBD oil is THC-free. So you won't give up a positive drug test. It's legal in Australia under, I think it's 300 milligrams per litre of CBD per litre of oil. But laws are always changing. We're becoming more relaxed as time goes. As you've seen a lot of things on the news about benefits with cancer especially. It's a awesome tool, CBD.
Yeah. And what's some of the other tools like if you're throwing in, say, ashwagandha?
Ashwagandha is great for stress. Great for stress and anxiety. I also like passion fruit flower, something good to have at night time to help you sleep. I mean, it kind of depends on the situation. So for your brain, I like
nootropics.
Lion's mane, cordyceps, CBD. For circulatory systems, I like ginger extract, licorice root extract. Chili extract is actually really good to get the blood pumping.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, you might have seen some of the clips I have on Instagram down at the health clinic, Pinnacle Health Clinic. So health clinic, I go down to Sydney and they've got a cryotherapy chamber, float tanks, a sensory deprivation tanks.
And how good are they for you, like when it's got to do with cryo and the deprivation? Float tanks, sorry. Yeah.
So this is my project. Hopefully within the next 12 months we'll have one open here on the Central Coast. That's kind of my lifelong dream, and I'm saving for all the equipment and everything, and we're getting there. But
if it's cryo, make it wheelchair accessible, brother. Yeah. I'll come wheeling in.
Yeah, no, I'll hit you up for a session straight 100%. Away. That's what I'm saving for at the moment, it's the cryo machine. Got a lot of things in the woodwork, but hopefully within the next 12 months we'll have a health clinic open here on the coast with a hyperbaric chamber, cryotherapy chamber, float tanks, and like the red light therapy beds. That's where we're starting. That's where I'm starting off. Yeah. Because
I use light therapy myself.
Oh, you do? Yeah.
Yeah, so I use it if I get pressure areas.
Yep.
So I utilise that with – yeah, so going back to
– you use the red light therapy beds?
Yeah. Oh, not the beds themselves. I've got like a Bioptron gun.
Yep.
So I've got it put on to me from another quadriplegic. Like I said, I'll give anything a crack.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I'm really diligent on – skincare, skin health.
Yep.
And because at the end of the day, like people in chairs, you don't want to get a red mark.
No.
Because it can lead it onto something else. Yep. And with these light guns, it can get the blood flowing, get it moving.
Yep.
And I've been utilizing that plus other creams and stuff that I use, and, you know, it seems to work. So.
Do you liking it?
Yeah. 100%.
I think one of the biggest things is that they're not well known. People don't know about them. No. I think they're so advantageous, is that a word?
Yeah.
For collagen production. And, you know, after lying under it, you just do feel so relaxed. And, you know, I've noticed any blemishes and stuff like that clear up. I took one of my Muay Thai fighters in there. She was a week out from her fight and her legs were just smashed with bruises. She did a cryotherapy session, then a red light therapy, and she sent me photos the next day. And you wouldn't believe, like, it's one of those things you wouldn't believe, like, before and afters, wow, like those Muay Thai bruises to
really
the legs.
Gone. Pretty much.
You saw faint outlines compared to being black and blue like the day before.
Jesus.
What
a difference, huh?
So, yeah, I guess back to how I started off in this was, so I go down to the health clinic, jump in the cryotherapy chamber, and we'll have some chili extract as we're hopping in the cryotherapy. So you can see I've got a video clip on my Instagram. I go down to minus 195 degrees Celsius in the cryotherapy chamber, and it is that bloody cold, but you're having the chili extract at the same time. So it's like your body is warm and you feel the blood just pumping through your system.
Yeah.
But yet you're frozen on the outlet. So it's one of the most sensational feelings.
What's the bloody Scoville levels on this chili extract? Is it a bit of a burner or what?
You should have asked Mitch about them next time. I took him down there and he, I probably gave him a bit too much and he was choking up. You only want one drop of chili on the tongue. That's it. I gave him probably three or four drops and he started coughing and spluttering and it's pretty strong stuff. But when you're in the cryotherapy, it's golden because you start to freeze and then all of a sudden this warms up from the insides. So you don't know whether you're hot or you're cold or you're. It's just such a sensational feeling.
Weird sensations.
Yeah.
Your body wouldn't know what to bloody do.
No, exactly right.
Yeah.
You're thinking you're about to start to freeze, and then you get this big heat rush from the inside, and you're like, it's like you can just start running a million miles. I don't know.
And then after that, bang, what into the float tanks, or where does that come in?
Yeah. So actually, I'd do the float tank first. The idea of that is you're relaxing in Epsom salts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like you're taking a hot salt bath. The temperature's at about 36 degrees, so it's about the same temperature as your blood. So after you get in there and you sit down and you relax, you've got no senses. That's why they call it the sensory deprivation tank, because the water is the same temperature as your blood. So it doesn't feel like you're in a bath it's not like you're in the ocean or anything, because the water's at the same temperature, so you just feel like you're floating in space almost. It's crazy. And because it's 800 pound, 800 kilo of Epsom salt in a small bathtub, you're floating on the top like the Dead Sea. So if you know about the Dead Sea, how you just float on top of the surface because it's so dense with salt, same as these float pods.
Yeah.
And they say, I think a one-hour float is equivalent to kind of a 5-6 hour deep sleep.
Really?
Yeah.
See, and that's what I've always wanted to give it a crack, just me being like a quadriplegic,
but
being in a float tank, just being able to float, you know what I mean? Like, I don't get out into the ocean and get out to what I used to do, and I've always wanted to do that just for, one, just being in the water, but taking in all the health benefits with that.
Yeah, well, we'll
physically and mentally, you know.
I'll get you set up for one.
100%.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
Like I said,
I've got hoists and all sorts of equipment that I use to.
Okay. Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm trying to get all my own equipment and want to open up a clinic here, but you know, we're still obviously a very, very expensive kind of procedure. Yeah. But if not, I head down to Sydney kind of. Once a fortnight, once a month, to catch up with some fighters or whatnot. So we'll try and we'll bring you along.
100%. If it's if it's along the disability realms and I'll guinea pig that stuff for sure.
Yeah,
bro,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm all about it. Whatever's going to give it edge, you know.
We'll get you set up in have a float and have a cryo. I'm sure we can figure it out.
Oh man, I'm getting excited for that.
Yeah, no,
just
definitely.
That feeling of floating, you know. I haven't done it for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, I bet. No, it'd be great. It's one of the best feelings. So relaxing too. You're back in this, it's about a 2 meter by 2 meter capsule, pitch black with infrared light, so you can change your light, whether it be blue, yellow, red, whatever, and you just sit back there. I tend to just keep my eyes shut and just float.
And, are you taking any cordyceps or anything like that before you jump in, or you just
I haven't recently. I'll do a mini brain extract. So that's like some ashwagandha and stuff like that. I haven't had my cordyceps or lines. Lines may it actually be pretty good. It really gets you kind of stimulating and gets like those lucid dreams happening if you have it at night. And that's what your float tank's like. It's like floating and just being lucid dreaming. I have once had a few joints before having a float, and that was awesome. I just kind of lowed back and almost went to sleep.
I
floated for like 2 hours that day.
Really?
That was like, that's probably like one of the longest sessions they said anybody had. What it felt like was I felt like I was just floating in space. Like, I don't want to be cliche or anything.
I was
lying back there, just floating on top of the water, had my eyes shut, and it just felt like I was just cruising through space.
And what was the benefits there, you reckon?
Relaxation.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely the
relaxation. Because that would have just put your mind and body in a different state.
Yeah. I just felt so relaxed. And like I said, I was in it for, I think it was 90 minutes. And the equivalent to that is like a 6 hour deep sleep. And, oh, you'd know it. You hop out and you just felt that relaxed.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh.
That's awesome.
And it stayed that way for a week. Yeah.
Throw me in
one. We'll get it set up. I'll have a talk to the boss down there. And we'll see what we can do.
100%. But, mate, just COVID-19, it's throwing everybody in a spin this year. But how's it been? Like, what's the general scene in combat sports? And just with some of the work that you're doing, like.
Well, thankfully, my work hasn't really taken a toll, hasn't really had much of a dent, but on the combat side, it has. So combat sports has just stopped dry. There's been no fights, there's been no action for since the end of last year, start of this year.
Unless you're the UFC and can bloody afford a Fight Island.
Fight Island.
Far out.
Be good to just whip a Fight Island out of your backside. Yeah. Something like this happened. So my work with fighters has pretty much stopped. My work with the everyday person, though, has picked up. So I kind of compensated with that because you've got a lot of people who started to become more health conscious. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were reaching out to me, asking for advice and buying some supplements and just getting on the diet plans. Okay, I'm at home now. I'm not exercising. I'm not even working. I need to kind of clean up my diet a bit. So how do we do that? Mm. So I guess I've kind of balanced out through the COVID because my fighters have all dropped off, but the average person has kind of picked up. If we're talking for the business.
Yeah, okay.
But it's sent society into a bit of a spin, hasn't it?
Mate, yeah, it's a tricky world that we're living in and no one knows how to really navigate this path.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, if you're a bloody world leader or whoever it may be, or just like you and I, like, it's the first time any of us have
had to deal with it. Yeah.
This, so.
I had a fresh new passport ready and I was ready to go overseas.
Yeah,
just got a new passport in the mail about a month before it happened.
Yeah, what you're looking at, doing training or working overseas holiday? Or?
Looking at going over to China to have a look at some of these machines for the clinic.
Ah, yeah. Nice.
So, look, I have a relationship with some people in China. That's how I tend to know about these manufacturing products, like they were kind of looking after me saying, no, don't go here, don't do that, don't do this. And that's how I kind of got clued onto all of that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't touch food products from some of these third world places.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you're looking at everyday equipment, a lot of this is manufactured in China. So it's kind of.
So, mate, in a. I wouldn't just say in a perfect world, but in general, is there any athletes, like if it's a bit of a wish list, that you want to work with in your field, whether if it's in Oz or outside of the continent, outside of Australia, international?
Gee.
Is there any, I want to work with blah, blah, I reckon I could really give him a boost, or if it's just a general fighter that you're a fan of in any discipline?
I'd be privileged to work with anybody in the UFC because that, you know, that's the top level when it comes to weight cutting. Like, that's the pinnacle. That's where you've got to be on your ball, you've got to be doing it right, otherwise it really affects your performance. Lately, some of the guys I've been working with have been sparring with Paul Gallen leading up to, he's got a fight with Mark Hunt soon. So some of the guys I've been working with,
you said Paul Gallen, the footy player, Mark Hunt,
yeah
Jesus Christ. Mark, I mean, Paul Gallen.
Yeah, so Paul Gallen.
And that's just going to be boxing, yeah?
And that's going to be a boxing fight, yeah.
Mark, he'll take your goddamn head off.
it's going to be scary. So Paul's been sparring with some Big Islander boys that I've been working with, which are, friends with Mark Hunt and whatnot. So gets a bit of that training behind up his belt. So that's kind of been a big draw card on my having someone like Gal, seeing him at the gym training.
100%.
It's kind of give myself a slap in the face and like, wow.
Yeah.
He's a big name in Australia.
Yeah.
You don't get much bigger. But, yeah, I don't work with him. But, yeah, he's just started coming in to train with some of the guys that I have been working with several years.
Within the doing same some sparring and stuff.
Yeah, whatnot, leading into his fights.
Yep.
And yeah, so I've given myself a few slaps in the face seeing him sparring and then going home 2 days later seeing it on the news or whatnot.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Never would have thought this, 5-10 years ago.
Yeah,
that
true.
I'd be
man.
Here watching.
That's nuts, eh?
Watching someone like him spar.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess.
And it'd be up for a charity fight too, probably.
Yeah. If you're in the boxing community and Muay Thai community, I've worked with, some world champions or whatnot, and then you know, I mean, if you're in the combat ring, you know the names, but outside of the sport, I guess a lot of people wouldn't know necessarily who these boxers or kickboxers are.
Yeah, unless you're right in it, diehard fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so, mate, is there anything that you want to mention along the lines of if it's some of the nutrition programs that you run and what you do, whether if it's what people might be able to see online or,
or
what you're promoting through social media or?
Well, I've got my website, Instagram, Facebook, Combat Nutrition, or www.combat-nutrition.com, the website. So I've got your basic everyday supplements, and then I also do nutrition plans, so personalized nutrition plans. So what that involves is an initial consult. We run through some questions. I get your details, and then I kind of jot out your macro figures, so your protein, fats, carbohydrate goals, and then we'll touch base once a week for 8 weeks. So I kind of sell 8-week programs.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That's a go. So you got a bit out there, and it's good that people can so people can do the consultations. Is it like if it's obviously it's a bit harder in person, but could that, you know, reach out if it was Zoom or over the phone?
No, we'll do it's pretty much all over the phone these days. Now, until I get my clinic set up, obviously everything will be running out of there, but from the moment it's over home and over the computer. I work with a handful of guys on the Central Coast. I work with loads of guys in Sydney, a couple of guys in Queensland, guys in New Zealand, guys at Dubbo, been from there. So, yeah, all over the place. So
Kyle Noak out from Dubbo.
I know him, I don't work with Kyle, obviously, but he was an old bouncer out there back in the day, I think.
Yeah.
Commercial. Yeah.
Mate, so that's good, you know, people can reach out and get amongst it, and if they want to, you know, either drop weight as a fighter or if they just want to get a bit healthy, they can
If you want to get healthy, if you want to lose weight, or even if you want to gain some weight, specialising in weight cuts. So what that is for combat sports, we want to gradually lose weight over an 8 to 12 week period, get on the scale and rehydrate properly so you're at peak performance in the ring. So that's kind of the area I specialise in is combat sports weight cuts.
Yep.
So we're dropping weight and we're putting it back on to fuel your performance.
Awesome. Brother, you've thrown out your website. So is there anything like when it's got to do with social media? So you've got Instagram?
Yeah, Combat Nutrition on Instagram and Facebook.
Yep.
Yep.
That's where you're at?
That's where I'm at.
Bang. Yep. Done, Climbing. Son.
Give it a like, give it a share.
Bang.
Reach out and send us a message.
That's it. Share the love. And, brother, is there any tips, some just quick hot tips that you wouldn't mind throwing out there if you've got something that you can fire out?
One of the biggest things around when I'm talking to everybody is those protein goals. You want to try to get at least 25 grams of protein at each meal. If you don't know what that is, have a quick internet search. Reach out to me. Go through my Instagram page. I've got a load of posts just about all these types of stuff, how much protein you should be having, how much fats you should be having, how many carbohydrates you should be having, and most importantly, how much water you should be drinking each day. True. One of the big things people forget is not drinking enough water.
Hydrate.
So, yeah, keep hydrated. Keep your protein up to 25 grams to 35 grams at each meal. Drink 2 to 3 liters of water a day. Healthy fats, limit your carbohydrates, good sources of carbohydrates, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, lean meats, lots of water.
Awesome. Aaron, much appreciated, brother, for coming down here and having a yarn.
Nah, thanks for having me on, Jake.
And, mate, I can't wait to get slung into one of these
let's flow get it tanks set up.
And we'll give it a crack.
We'll get it set up, mate.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Beauty. Thanks.
Thanks, mate. See you, folks. Good solid information there, just with all things to do with weight cutting and how to do it safely and how to get the right foods into you, the right sups, but how to do it in a timely fashion to make sure that you can optimize your performance in the ring or the octagon. Just his knowledge on botanicals and all sorts of things to do with nutrition was awesome. And if you liked the podcast, hit that subscribe button. It'd be much appreciated. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at streetrollingcheetah or email one word, streetrollingcheetah@gmail.com. And we've also got a Facebook page, Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs, so check it out. I want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, see you on the next one.